Merry Christmas.
Welcome to Nice Ashes. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nate. And we are coming to you on Christmas Day, which is very exciting. And we have a pretty exciting show episode for you today. What are we smoking for Christmas, Mike?
We are smoking a very special cigar. It is the Asylum 13 Ogre in the Gordo size.
Yes. And we don't normally do Gordo sizes.
We do not usually do Gordos, but it's a special episode. It's a special day. We all get to either gain resources or lose resources, depending on your age.
Yes. And you know what? Hopefully those socks that have been hanging on by the last thread get replaced today when you open your presents, or maybe you already have. I should note that, not to be overshadowed by Christmas, but this is also our season 3 finale. So we will be taking 2 months off and be coming back to you, I believe, the first Wednesday in March.
Sounds good to me.
Does that sound about right, Mike?
I think so. I know that it's really cold in my studio here.
Yeah.
So it's incredible. It's been raining. It rained for probably 15 hours straight, like freezing rain. And it's miserable outside. Even the third podcast host, my dog, she did not want to be outside today.
Yeah.
So...
So talk to us a little bit about the cigar, Mike. This is a looker. We had to peel off a green, I don't know, like tissue paper type half wrapper or something, or three-quarter wrapper, right? Two-thirds wrapper? I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't have the traditional cellulose wrapper. It had like an actual paper wrapper, almost like gift wrap. And it is a beautiful barber pole with a natural green leaf and like a Maduro leaf. And it is just lovely.
Yes. And Mike noticed right away they put a little ring at the end of the green leaf.
They did. They put a ring on the end.
At the end there, yeah.
So, and this thing is, feel-wise, it's perfect. It's firm, but it's got a little spring to it. It does have some veins. Mine does, at least. So it's not perfect in that way.
I see a vein, but you know what? Cigar aficionado could suck it, because this one looks great.
That's the only reason I mentioned it.
I know.
Because cigar aficionado and their anti-veiny stick philosophy. Hey,
cigar aficionado, we got a good veiny one here for you. Put in your mouth.
Do
now
it.
Now, that's not the Christmas spirit. We're going to get this lit, and then I think we're going to delve into our topic here. We've got a doozy of a topic, one we've been wanting to do for, I don't know, a long time, I think.
It is one of my favorite Christmas traditions, so. Of course, I didn't check my lighter, like always.
Yep.
And now I have to light it with matches.
See, and I checked mine earlier today and topped it off because... I don't know. This one took a bit to get going, but it is a little bit bigger than the ones we normally do. And I believe this has to be like the second Asylum 13 we've ever smoked, right, Mike?
It's the second one that I've ever smoked.
Yeah, so. Me too. And the first one we didn't smoke on the show, so.
No, I think that's part of the reason why we did the show to begin with, is that cigar.
Yes, it was. Because I remember we were talking about it, and that's one of the big... I think that's still the biggest cigar I've ever smoked, that first Asylum 13 we did. And, I think we were talking about like the price point on it and how it was kind of crazy inexpensive for the quality of the smoke and the size of the stick. But for the topic, as Mike is getting lit, Mike's favorite Christmas tradition is making a fruitcake and then seeing how far it can be flung across the yard.
Oh, you got it. You got
it. And so that's what we're talking about this Christmas. No, this is not what we're talking about this Christmas. This Christmas. Nice Ashes is going to delve into the war on Christmas.
Dun, dun, dun! Not a lot of budgeting for sound effects this episode.
Well, we don't know. We'll see. It is a special episode. If you hear funny sound effects, then we're trying something new out, I guess. First few puffs of this, though, are pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good start. I can tell that it's got that natural leaf on the end is making it a lot lighter than I was expecting.
Very much so.
But in a good way. I think that because of the size of this stick, the lighter start is probably going to be a good thing.
Yes, I think so. Now, we both bought this stick from the same place. This is not one of our internet order sticks. This one's special, I think. What did this one come out to be? I think it was like $14 maybe before tax.
I'll be honest with you, my wife bought it, and she didn't tell me what it cost. So
even better. So exactly. Yeah, I was just there, and it was, I think it was like $13.99 or something. Something in that, and that's from a cigar lounge, so.
So how long has this been in your humidor?
It has been in my humidor, let's see, it's been in my humidor 3 days.
Okay, mine's more like 2 weeks, so. Yep. That might make a difference.
Possibly. It might, but this place has an amazing humidor that's no questions in my mind that it was stored properly.
The difference would be my faulty humidor, not
Sure.
Yeah, it's a very reputable place that we went to, so.
Yes, at separate times. Well, Mike didn't even go. He sent his wife, so there you go. So Mike and I kind of talked a little bit, as we do sometimes, and I think that, and Mike said he had, so I broke my notes for the War on Christmas into three sections, a la Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol. So I have the historical or the ghost of Christmas past. I have the modern or ghost of Christmas present. And I even have the future, the ghost of Christmas yet to come. And I think Mike was saying he had a lot of his notes in the ghost of Christmas past section. So do you want me to kind of give an overview of the Ghost of Christmas Past and then turn it over to you to do your stuff?
Yeah, we can do that.
So we both, this is a Mike and Nate knows, but Mike and Nate research things differently, I guess, and follow different, rabbit holes, shall we say, into the abyss of the internet. So the very first War on Christmas, and it wasn't really called the War on Christmas back then, but the very first one, it was the Puritans versus the Protestant Church in 1642. King Charles, do we call it the first? King Charles I? I don't know. The first one.
It's Charles the First.
Charles the First. I get confused because it's like there was a Leto and then a Leto and then a Leto II. So I don't, it's very confusing to me, all these numbers. And I was just doing some, I was talking to one of my coworkers about the Dune series. No spoiler alerts for season 4, Nice Ashes. But it spans like 25,000 years or something ridiculous like that. So anyway, King Charles I agreed to effectively ban any kind of celebratory religious services, drinking, or general merrymaking, as the Puritans believed that life should be lived solely according to the Bible, and the Bible made no mention of celebrating Jesus' birthday. I don't know why all those wise men and kings showed up then, but whatever.
Right.
1657, Parliament made it illegal to close businesses on Christmas or even hold a Christmas worship. So I want it to be clear that it's not the 1642, 1650, whatever, Democrats that are trying to outlaw Christmas. It is Christians saying we don't want Christmas to be celebrated.
Yes.
Was that surprising?
Same Puritans that founded much of the northeastern part of the United States.
Yes, and we will get there very shortly. So the Parliament making it illegal to do Christmas stuff led to riots, and Oliver Cromwell ordered the execution of King Charles I, although I don't know if it was solely over the Christmas stuff. I'm sure he did other things that were interesting. And then Oliver Cromwell became the Lord Protector in 1653, but he upheld the Christmas ban. The monarchy was restored in 1660, and then Christmas was no longer banned. So that made some Puritans unhappy with the Church of England, and they came over to the New World in Massachusetts specifically. And in their community, celebrating Christmas was discouraged, but not punishable until 1658. By 1681, there were no longer any fines associated with celebrating Christmas, but they could be charged with disturbing the peace. Massachusetts officially made Christmas a holiday in 1856, and a few years later, well, you know, a decade, 14 years later, President Ulysses S. Grant made Christmas a national holiday in 1870, which was what? Right shortly after the Civil War.
Yes, it was.
Despite becoming a federal holiday, a lot of Christians still didn't celebrate it, as there was no mention of the nativity in the Bible. Washington Irving wrote several stories about his fondness of Christmas celebrations, which had an influence on Charles Dickens, whose Christmas Carol came out in 1843 and was widely read in America. Christmas Carol, with Scrooge embracing the holiday and cheer by giving gifts, actually helped drive Christmas into commercial space instead of the religious space. So that book had a profound impact on the way that Christmas took shape, especially here. And Martin Luther, you know the one, tacking things on other doors of churches he doesn't frequent, hoped to shift the focus away from St. Nicholas Day, which I think was December 6th, if I'm not mistaken.
was.
And then he was trying to minimize gift giving and give more attention to Jesus. There were Lutherans in Northern Europe that gave gifts, but that changed when Prince Albert married Queen Victoria, and Prince Albert enjoyed giving gifts on Christmas. And he also brought with him the idea of the Christmas tree, which ultimately replaced the Yule log as the primary Christmas decoration. And the gift giving and Christmas trees were already present in America, and I believe it was more so with the Germans. But it didn't take off in popularity till after the Civil War, given a little extra boost by Charles Dickens. I do have something that kind of transitions us from the ghost of Christmas past to the ghost of Christmas present, but I know you have a lot of stuff to talk about in the past, Mike.
I do.
All right, so the floor is yours.
All right, well, I went a little further back in my war on Christmas than Nate did, because
wait, are you
I have
waging
a
war on Christmas, Mike?
And I have a theory, and I'll share this theory with the listener.
Yes.
Shortly, I am sure. So, in 221, Sextus Julius Africanus, a historian, maintained that Jesus of Nazareth was conceived on the 25th of March and was born on the 25th of December. But before this, and after this, to be honest with you, there was significant infighting about when Jesus was born, since the date is not explicitly mentioned in the Bible. He pinpointed Jesus' birthday because of John the Baptist's birthday and the relative age of those two historic figures. In 336 AD is the first time in the historical record that Christmas was celebrated, and this was documented in the chronograph of 354. December 25th also coincides with the winter solstice that the Romans traditionally celebrated in the Western Roman Empire. In the year 597, the Council of Tours, I'm sorry, I think it's 567, the Council of Tours proclaimed the 12 days from Christmas to Epiphany as a sacred and festive season. This established the 12 days of Christmas starting on Christmas Day, December 25th, till January 6th.
Also, Mike, the Roman Empire. As a yes. quick note here, Mike, if you celebrate the 12 days of Christmas, and if you have a lover that celebrates the 12 days of Christmas, you have a fuck ton of birds, because most of those are birds.
A lot of birds. So the 12 days of Christmas was, some critics would say, invented, because the Western Church celebrated Jesus' birthday on the 25th of December, and the Eastern Orthodox Church celebrates Jesus' birthday on January 6th. Due to differences in their dating systems. Yes. Also, on January 6th, has something to do with John the Baptist. I didn't do that much research into it. The Eastern Orthodox Church has a lot more John the Baptist involved with their religion.
Sure.
Now, from the mid-500s all the way into the 1800s, Christmas was celebrated as a 12-day festival starting on December 25th. Now, as Nate mentioned, gift giving is a relatively recent Christmas invention, largely attributed to Martin Luther in his attempts to delegitimize the Catholic Church and their traditions, and he wanted the birth of Christ in the Western Church, December 25th, to be more important than it was.
Yes.
Nate mentioned the Puritans. The Puritans wanted Christmas banned largely because the 12-day festival was libidinous and full of public intoxication and merrymaking, which they thought was ungodly. And Nate mentioned many of the important dates. The important thing to remember is that in the American colonies, in the northern half, Christmas was banned up until 1681 in Massachusetts. While the southern states did celebrate Christmas, it was a 12-day festival, not a single day. Due to serious amounts of immigration by Catholics and Lutherans from Northern Europe, Christmas became more and more popular amongst the population, and by 1870, it became a federal holiday. Now, it wasn't until 1890 that the last U.S. state made Christmas an official holiday, because traditional American values in the 1800s was anti-Christmas. Christmas was, in fact, a influence by immigrants to America, and it is kind of a, an insidious infestation of our social life by those horrifying immigrants who never quite assimilated from Northern Europe to the United States.
You talking Sam Walton and his family, or?
That's a reference to Benjamin Franklin, friend of the show.
Yes, friend of the show. We've had him on many times.
Friend of the show, Ben Franklin. He really hated those Germans and Swedes.
Yes, good old Benny.
As Nate also mentioned, the Christmas tree and gift giving was not in the cultural zeitgeist of the English-speaking world until the 1840s, when the German Prince Albert married Queen Victoria. Now, Nate did not mention the 1823 poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas, which has the famous line, "'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse." This began the popular images of Santa Claus, as we now know.
Yes, I did come across the poem in my research, but to hear you read it, Mike, in the original German, chef's kiss.
So, in 1862, Thomas Nast, the famous German-American cartoonist, began depicting Santa Claus. His images were inspired by German Christmas traditions that he, of course, brought over to America from his foreign land, and he invented the image of Santa Claus as a modern plump guy with 12 reindeer, smoking a pipe, and carrying a sack of gifts. This is the precursor to the advertisements Coca-Cola used.
Yep.
Look up his cartoons if you want to see them. They're very, very interesting. That's kind of the Christmas past, with the pure American tradition of not celebrating Christmas being infected by those non-conforming Northern European immigrants to this great land.
Yes.
In the middle of the 19th century.
How dare they bring joy, merriment, and drinking? How dare they?
Well, they weakened the hard, backboned American Constitution. You know, the last great generation of Americans, obviously, yes, was in the 1830s before the, yes, introduction of the Christmas tree and gift-giving on Christmas.
Yeah. the veterans of the last great war, the war to end all wars of 1776 or what have you.
Yeah, you know, the papists and the papist light.
Yes.
They just ruined Christmas in America 150 years ago or whatever, 175 years ago.
Yes, but boy, what a boom for our modern day economy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the thing that I wanted to kind of, and this is a little segue, if you're ready to go to the Ghost of Christmas Present, Mike.
Is the Christmas present going to be going into Henry Ford?
Yes. Rattle your chains, everyone, because I wanted to talk about an actual war on Christmas before we go fully into the modern day. In Russia, 1925, there was an official ban on Christmas, and Christmas didn't come back to the Russians until 1992. But in the first 5 years of Soviet power, soldiers destroyed churches, and the Bolsheviks executed more than 1,200 Russian Orthodox priests, 28 bishops. In the 70 years of Soviet rule, it's estimated that the state murdered between 12 and 20 million Christians in its various anti-religious campaigns. So when we use terms these days about a war on Christmas, there was an actual war where people died and were killed and were executed for celebrating Christmas. It wasn't people getting upset about Happy Holidays or a Starbucks cup, but those are yet to come. So I just wanted to put that in perspective. I don't know if you came across that Russian Christmas stuff in your research, Mike.
I didn't. I focused on America because a large part of the talk about the war on Christmas in our modern times is preserving traditional American values. And
sure, yeah.
I just wanted to point out that Christmas as we know it now is, you know, not an American value in 1840.
Wasn't when it started.
Right. In 1890, my great-grandfather was alive, and
yeah,
that's when the last state made Christmas a holiday. Like, I met my great-grandmother, who was also alive in 1890.
Like, yeah.
It's not that long ago, people.
No, it's not terribly that long ago. In the grand scheme of, you know, we're talking the 1600s when the Puritans and the Protestants were fighting in Europe about whether or not they can celebrate Christmas or not.
Right. And my grandparents were immigrants who were Lutherans who celebrated Christmas, so.
Yes. I've got a brief little thing, and I know you've got more about Henry. I know you do, but I'll do kind of my brief overview. Because when I was looking at this, I wanted to go to the history of the war on Christmas, and that led me to the Russian thing, and then just kind of more modern times. So everything in the modern section is 1920s and up till today. But since it became a national holiday, Christmas has become commercialized to the point where now it's not just a religious holiday. It's also a secular holiday. So people that don't care about Jesus one way or the other, I'm not trying to blaspheme on Christmas, but people that don't care about Jesus, they're not Christians, whatever, they still celebrate Christmas. And we'll get into the stats at the end of the episode here. But in the early 1920s, Henry Ford published not a one-page paper. Should we call this an essay, Mike, a la Sparked? Because this is a four-page paper. I mean, I think this is truly, fully an essay. Henry Ford published a four-page paper about how Jews were keeping Christmas cards out of stores, saying it was difficult to find cards mentioning anyone's birth. And I know you have more about Henry Ford to talk about. I tried to not delve too deeply into that rabbit hole, but I know that was probably very tempting for you, Mike.
It was. And the letter Nate is referencing is called "Last Christmas, Most People Had a Hard Time Finding Christmas Cards That Indicated in Any Way That Christmas Commemorated Someone's Birth." And this was published. Do not. This is what it was called, people. So don't turn me into the Gestapo here. This was published in the International Jew, The World's Foremost Problem, which was published by Ford's personal newspaper Henry Ford was a famous anti-Semite.
Yes.
A famous anti-Semite. So don't say that. That's not on me. That's on Henry Ford. Henry Ford's...
Put another Yule log on the Yule fire.
That's and, right.
drive your Yule car. Hopefully right. Not a Ford.
So Henry Ford, this is a direct quote from the article. "Not only do Jews disagree with Christian teaching, which is their perfect right, and no one dare question it, but they seek to interfere with it. It is not religious tolerance in the midst of religious difference, but religious attack that they preach and practice. The whole record of Jewish opposition to Christmas, Easter, and certain patriotic songs show that." Now that sounds an awful lot like the rhetoric we hear today.
Yes, well, and here's my counterpoint to old Henry. As I was doing some research, and I didn't bother to do this because I didn't want to get bogged down with a lot of this stuff, but if you Google this and you can find it on, Wikipedia or something, there's a whole list of pretty much all of the Christmas songs everyone knows and loves or hates. I'm very, very, very anti-Christmas music, for the most part. But most of the Christmas songs that are popular Christmas songs that we still listen to today were written by Jews, either fully or in part.
That does not surprise me. That doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah. Back to Henry Ford. Ford also, in his articles, accused Jews of profiteering on the sale of Christmas merchandise while simultaneously conspiring to undermine the religious significance of Christmas.
Sure.
Now, a little backstory. In the 1910s and 20s, Jewish leaders were leading a First Amendment fight based on public schools and the Christians in public schools using organized events to try to convert their children to Christianity. And they were in opposition to Christmas decorations and Bible readings in school and other related Christmas celebrations, let's say, like nativity scenes and things of that nature. And it's very similar to what's going on now with atheists and Christianity.
Sure. Well, I think, to be fair, Mike, it should be anyone who's not Christian and Christianity.
Well, now, yes. Then, yeah, now, the Jews were the target. Now it's
I guess Muslims and atheists,
I suppose.
With regard to the school stuff or the public buildings, you know, I know there's always a fight on, do we put the Ten Commandments in our court building or on our school? You know, do we have a Christmas pageant? Do we not have a Christmas pageant? What have you? Does the school put up a nativity scene or do they put up like an inflatable Santa Claus? And I think, and this probably goes to your point about, you know, Christmas subverting the puritanical origins of America, but having an overtly religious anything anywhere with government or public spaces, unless they do it for all religions, right?
Right, and that's the quagmire kind of they're stuck thing. In now because the Church of Satan wants to put up statues of Baal. And
yeah, why not?
Baphomet, things like that. That is a different topic.
Could we get Baphomet on the show?
So I would also like to add here, and maybe I'm getting ahead of Nate, but the standardized Santa image didn't come together until the 1930s when Coca-Cola began an ad campaign with the modern image of Santa Claus, which by the 1930s, my grandparents were thinking, not adults, but they were definitely teenagers. So
yeah,
that's really not that long ago.
not too far ago at all. Mike, I think I'm about halfway done with a cigar. Where are you at?
Are you really? I am not halfway done. I am a quarter of the way through probably.
Oh, okay.
But what do you think?
I like it. The green leaf I can really taste. It's a very prevalent, I don't know if it's the leaf or the tobacco they used inside, but it's not as dark as I kind of anticipated having smoked the other Asylum 13 that we did, but I like it. I think it's quite nice.
I agree. It's a lot lighter smoke than I thought it was, and it takes a lot more puffing to keep it lit than I was expecting as well.
It does, and that's probably why I'm further along, because I've been trying to keep it lit. It had a little bit of an uneven burn at start for the first, maybe third of it, so I was kind of like lighting around to try and even things out. It's fairly girthy, not the girthiest we've ever smoked, but it's fairly girthy, and it takes a little bit of effort to draw air through it. Not a huge amount, like not an amount that I would say it's poorly constructed. It's just a little tighter packed, I think, than most of the cigars we smoke.
I'm not having any draw issues. I cross-cut mine.
Oh, sure.
But I am having an uneven burn. I would say probably 3/4 of an inch different.
Yep, that's on par with mine.
Yep. Just as a note to the listeners, and it is very mild. I'm surprised how mild it is. There's a lot of smoke.
Yeah.
But very, very mild.
What are you pairing yours with, Mike?
Right now I have a Mad Butcher IPA and a little glass of Canadian whiskey.
Hey, I almost got some whiskey, but what I did was I picked up the Sierra Nevada Celebration IPA, which is their, not really Christmas, but their probably Happy Holidays brew, right?
Yeah, I would say the holiday season for that one.
Yes, the winter, winter one. It's got the little log cabin with snow on the roof, so.
Yes, I wanted to pair this with Old Fuzzy Wig, but I thought that it would probably overpower the taste of the cigar.
Yes, possible.
So I did not. Which Old Fuzzy Wig is a Christmas tradition in my house, for sure. I love that stuff, at least once a year, so.
Do you have anything more on Henry Ford and anti-Semitism?
No, that's about it. Other than, you know, there's a lot of characters from that era that were pretty racist. So,
yes,
don't judge him too harshly. He was a man of his times. I disavow what he said, obviously.
Yeah, I think
that should go without saying, but apparently we have to say things like that.
Yeah, people of that era had a lot of very strong opinions about things that, perhaps upon checking with facts and what we know nowadays, simply aren't true, or they sound very offensive to our ears. And I'm not trying to defend Henry Ford at all, but a lot of the people, even the early movie stars, like even John Wayne, who I wouldn't consider an early movie star, but, you know, definitely within that earlier era of the, you know, 40s through the, I don't know, 80s, 90s, I suppose. Well, 80s, you know, had a lot of personal opinions that don't gel well with the inclusive society that we are set upon to create. And that's not a slam on the inclusive society by any stretch. They did not know how to phrase things or to temper their what they believe to be true with fact or friend making. So I think, you know, it's important to enjoy people of all different backgrounds.
Right. And this is an aside, but my grandparents were born in the 20s. And my grandmother was pretty prejudiced against Jewish people until she died, which was not that long ago. And she was raised German Catholic. And that was part of their religion, that the Jews murdered Jesus. So she was, you know, a product of her era. Let's put it that way. The World War II generation. So,
well, and if you believe a little sci-fi, I don't know, novella, short story, let's say, it was published, I don't know, I want to say maybe 50s, 60s, possibly 70s. Jesus wasn't killed by the Jews at all. What happened was there were all these time travel agencies, and everybody wanted to go and see the crucifixion of Jesus. And so this one person bought a package, and they all had to dress, you know, period appropriate. And they showed up, and it's like, let's all go to where was the crucifixion take place? Agorathea or something like that. That's the title of the little short story as we all go to Agrathea, wherever the crucifixion actually slash supposedly took place. And the time traveler from modern time at the time of writing of the book or novella, said that they were all there they were asked, the crowd was asked whether or not to spare Jesus's life. And everybody was chanting and shouting to execute him, to kill him, to crucify him. And this one time traveler looked around and noticed that all of the groups of people in the crowd had their little time travel kind of agent with them. And all the houses were full of people cowering in the shadows. And he thought, well, if all of the locals are in their homes, who are all these people chanting to kill Jesus? All of the time traveler tourists, man. So that's who we need to blame.
I can get down with that version of events.
I can totally get jiggy with that.
There we go.
Anyway, weird aside, but you know what?
The
crucifixion of Jesus and that whole thing is probably one of the most talked about things. I don't know if it's across humanity, but it's definitely something that's talked about an awful lot, or a lot of research and brain power has gone into that, whether figuring out when Jesus might have been born, when exactly he might have been crucified, creating stories around that, whether they're based on truth or based on fiction, and so on and so forth. But moving off of the Henry Ford stuff a little bit, I do want to mention that there have been articles published about the apparent lack of Christmas spirit, probably every year since the printing press was invented. But there are some notable ones from 1947 and 1975. There were some pretty big ones, and possibly more. And then in the 2000s, big retailers, in an effort to, you know, pad their pockets, I'm sorry, in an effort to not offend people, they sent letters to their employees instructing them to use Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas. And this is kind of where it starts to get into what we think of when we think of war on Christmas, because you've got the Merry Christmas crowd. You've got certain people that are soon to take office that say, we can say Merry Christmas again. And you've got people that say, well, it should just be Happy Holidays if you're an elected official and if you're in public space. And Happy Holidays is not offensive because it covers all of the equinoxial holidays, all of the end of year holidays, at least yes. For those who have the Caesar calendar.
Did you cover anything in the 1950s, Nate?
No. Do you want to do that before I go on to
the actual inciting
incident? Okay, well, do the 50s and 80s, and I have the actual inciting incident that kind of propelled us into the craziness that we now live with.
Okay. Well, in the 1950s, at the height of the Red Scare, 57% of the U.S. population attended church. It was 63.3% in 1960. So consider that in 1960, 63.3% of the U.S. population attended church regularly, and that was the peak attendance in the United States. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the year 1954, a little town called Waterloo, Iowa, started a campaign called Putting Christ Back in Christmas. They put a nativity scene in their main park. 1955, okay. The National Council of Churches, which represented 30 Protestant denominations, called for the inclusion of religious teachings in classrooms. Before 1955, it was banned, FYI, and they started putting pressure on the government.
Now, Mike, this is the same time frame where they added extra words to the Pledge of Allegiance.
They did. This is the same time frame.
Okay.
Is part of the Red Scare of the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. Everyone to be very clear that the original Pledge of Allegiance did not include the under God phrase, and that was added in the 50s.
Yes. Yes, it was. In 1957, Jules Cohen, prominent Jewish member of the National Community Relations Advisory Council, wrote that the principle of separation of church and state is under attack from many quarters and in many ways. There was a huge pushback in 1957 against Ossining New York High School that did a nativity scene, which is one of the very earliest nativity scenes at a school in the United States. And they had a lot of fights and a lot of bitter community protest. And at this, a very famous refrain was uttered by Reverend Frank Klausman of the Ossining Heights Church.
Yavor.
And he said, the Board of Education have allowed themselves to be coerced by a few, and in the name of tolerance have committed an act of intolerance. Because due to public pressure, the school board took down the nativity scene, and of course, local religious leaders were against it. Now,
well, certain religious leaders of certain religions were against it.
Certain religious leaders were against it. Yeah. So in 1958, the John Birch Society, which was a crazy right-wing anti-communist newspaper.
They came up in my research, too. And I saw that and I said, that's a Mike rabbit hole. I'm going to leave that for him.
Yeah. They wrote, one of the techniques now being applied by the Reds to weaken the pillar of religion in our country is the drive to take Christ out of Christmas, to denude the effect of its religious meaning. The UN fanatics launched their assault on Christmas in 1958, but too late to get very far before the holy day was at hand. They're already busy, however, at this very moment, on efforts to poison the 1959 Christmas season with their high-pressure propaganda. What they now want to put over on the American people is simply this. Department stores throughout the country are to utilize UN symbols and emblems as Christmas decorations.
Okay.
That's 1959,
why I have,
people.
The UN flag is my tree topper.
Mm-hmm. Now, the whole point of this, of course, is that in the 50s, there was a fake war on Christmas, I guess, certain religious and anti-communist groups attempted to get religion back in schools. That was banned due to the efforts in the 1910s and 20s.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was pushback. Now, there was another scare in the 80s during the Reagan administration.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Satanic Panic.
No, yeah, some of it. Yes.
All right, carry on, Mike.
The Reagan administration. In 1980, the Supreme Court ruled that posting the Ten Commandments in public schools was unconstitutional. In 1985, it found that Alabama's Moment of Silence statute was unconstitutionally based in favor of prayer. In 1987, they disallowed the teaching of creation science alongside evolution. And in 1989, they ruled that it is unconstitutional to erect a nativity scene on public property. Now, in the 80s, much like Henry Ford did in the 20s, newspaper editors complained loudly that Merry Christmas was giving way to Happy Holidays, even as big department stores maximized their profits via seasonal advertising. So the complaint about Happy Holidays that we remember is from the 2000s, but in the 80s, that was live and well. Yes. Now, not to step on Nate. The tale is old as time. Not to step on Nate, but the very first mention of the term, the War on Christmas, was in December of the year 2000. And this was coined by a conservative named Peter Brimelow.
Oh, yes.
Who had race-based critiques of U.S. immigration.
But they're bringing Christmas over here with their merriment, man. Like, we're not supposed to celebrate Christmas. Get these immigrants out of here.
Right. I didn't write his gall-dang website down. He's got a defunct website.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And he posted the first known war on Christmas on his website, and he warned readers that the war on Christmas was part of the struggle to abolish America.
Yes.
Yes. So on some random blog by some random white nationalist, he coined the term war on Christmas,
nice.
Which leads, I'm sure, to what Nate is going to say.
Yes. Well,
the year 2004.
About the year 2004, but I'm going to go back a little bit. I don't remember when. I think it was 1999. A certain William O'Reilly, better known now as Bill O'Reilly. He went by Bill back then, too. I'm messing with everybody. Tested out in, I think, an op-ed piece on a newspaper about, a war on Christmas and kind of the sentiments that he gets so worked up about. But it wasn't really until December 3rd, 2004, that Bill O'Reilly declared on air as a TV person, talking head, that Christmas was under siege.
A national emergency.
Yes. Yes.
I would also like to mention here that Bill O'Reilly is a Irish Catholic.
Yes.
Who is from immigrant stock, part of those immigrants in the mid-1800s that
he brought that
ruined
over and watered
traditional
down
American Christmas.
Pure America.
Yeah, they ruined American Christmas, those guys.
Yeah.
I'm part of the same group that came over, by the way. For those who were
put a Yule
angry.
Log on and celebrating private.
It's a Yule log. It's a 12-day festival.
Get drunk at home. Get drunk at home. Don't tell anybody about it.
Yeah. This is not a single day where we give gifts like some German Prince Albert.
Do you have Prince Albert in a can? Well, let him out. Is your refrigerator running? Better go catch it. Anyway, I've got a few more kind of like leaping forward a little bit, and then we can talk a little bit more about the modern time stuff too, because I know there's a whole bunch of Starbucks holiday cups that we could potentially get bogged down with. But I do want to say that Fox News, always the bastion of non-emotional, purely logical reporting, in December of 2021... they had a 50-foot Christmas tree outside of the Fox News headquarters, and it was set on fire. Fox News used the incident to build up the war on Christmas and insist that the perpetrator be charged with a hate crime. A hate crime. However, the police say the person who set the fire was a homeless man who likely had several mental and health challenges. But they need to be charged with a hate crime for burning a 50-foot Christmas tree. Now, he's not this person is not burning a nativity scene, not burning a crucifix in the yard or the plaza of the Fox News headquarters. It was a 50-foot Christmas tree. And anyone who's been around Christmas trees, at least the real ones, or the live ones, right? Not live anymore by the time they're in your house, know that they're incredibly flammable. So
if you don't water those things every day, they get so dry. And you have to cut the bottoms off to get, you know, because the ends will die.
Oh, yes.
And it's a lot of maintenance. Oh, it's horrible. Yes. We have a real Christmas tree in my house every year, and okay. I don't like it.
We went to an artificial one several years back, and I do not miss a single thing about a live one. My wife sometimes is like, oh, I wish we could have a real tree. And I'm like, what? So it can spew mold off into our house, and it can be a fire hazard. And then what do we do with it at the end of, like, it's a whole big tree. Like, we got to get rid of the whole thing, you know? And so we've got a really nice looking artificial one, and she's kind of relegated herself to hanging the little pine scent sticks in the tree, you know, so it smells kind of like it. But, you know, until you get close, you don't really know. You couldn't tell, I don't think.
They get so covered with crap anyway, which...
I know, right?
We planted 50 trees 2 years ago so we could have Christmas trees in the future.
Well, after, for 50 years, right?
Well, you know, the guy that we get our Christmas tree from, trees from will eventually retire. So yeah. That's our plan, you know. But anyway.
Yeah, so that was one. And then I want to also say that there have been several boycotts of Target, Gap, and Starbucks. Those are kind of the big three due to their switching of traditional Christmas wording and branding for the wider appeal of happy holidays. And there are so many people that get so upset about people saying happy holidays. Also, in more very recent times, during the COVID-19 pandemic, Tucker Carlson accused Dr. Fauci, who I don't know that I would go so far as to say that he's a friend of the show, since we did a whole book on why he's a villain by RFK Jr., but definitely a politician for sure. More politician than doctor, I would say. Tucker Carlson accused Dr. Fauci of trying to cancel Christmas, going so far to say Christianity is dying and being replaced by the cult of the coronavirus. And I know the 2019, 2020, and into early 2021 were very kind of turbulent times in America, because you had large swaths of the population who would wear a mask covering in their car alone driving around. And you had people that would refuse to wear masks for all sorts of reasons, saying it hindered their breathing and yada yada. So you had everyone along the spectrum of, is this a real thing or not?
Yes. Now, I would like to talk about the Committee to Save Merry Christmas. Did you research this at all? So as a result of Bill O'Reilly declaring a national emergency, aka the war on Christmas in 2004, the Committee to Save Merry Christmas was started in 2004, and it called for a boycott of Macy's and Bloomingdale's for not using the word Christmas. In 2005, as a part of this campaign, John Gibson wrote a book, The War on Christmas, How the Liberal Plot to Ban the Sacred Christian Holiday is Worse Than You Thought. And O'Reilly revised and extended his roster of anti-Christmas merchants to include Sears, Kmart, Kohl's, Target, Walmart, and Costco.
Did you say Kmart? What's that?
Yeah, I know, right? many Christian groups, including the American Family Association and the Catholic League, joined this retail boycott, and they included the Federated Department Stores, so on and so forth. And several of these stores reversed their official policy, and they allowed their people to say Merry Christmas again. In 2006, Bill O'Reilly declared victory in the war on Christmas.
much like Bush did, right?
Yeah. We'll get there.
Sorry, that was War on Terror.
War on Terror. And he said that the shows are... In December 2006, he said, Walmart and Macy's and all the big stores are saying Merry Christmas, and they've stopped ordering their employees to not say it, and they declared victory. Now, this didn't stop Fox from running the annual.
You know what? I don't think anything can stop Fox.
No. This doesn't stop Fox from airing their War on Christmas segments every year that I love.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of the news cycle during December, for sure. Are you going to cover anything in between 2004 and 2016?
Those years never happened. If anyone asks, I was out of the country.
I would just like to say that there's annual stories about the War on Christmas, and in 2016, President Donald Trump declared victory in the War on Christmas again. This was followed up in 2020 by Trump declaring that if Biden won the nomination, he would cancel Christmas.
I remember that. The year Christmas was canceled, I didn't get socks and underwear, and boy, are my ass cheeks cold.
Yeah, 2016. I think I worked Christmas because it was canceled. Or yes. 2020, I'm sorry. 2020. Yeah.
Whenever it was. I remember it.
Yeah, whatever year.
Like, it was yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. I know we won it in 2006 and then again in 16. But in 20, you know, it was on again.
Yeah, that was, we took the L, you know. But next year, we got high hopes this year, right?
Yeah. It's like the most celebrated holiday in the country. I'm sure there's a war on it.
Well, we're going to get into stats later, Mike. So don't be poisoning people's opinions at Christmas with stats prematurely.
So Nate will be happy, and the listeners will be even happier. I only have one more line left in my notes.
I'm always happy.
And it's a stat. Mike. I have one stat, and that's all. So
bring it, Mike.
There we go. Huh?
You have one stat? Oh, that's the one. Oh, you have one more thing in your notes.
Yeah, one more line in my notes, and it is a stat. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to the Ghosts of Christmas Yet to Come section because we are
going to be rubbing our crystal ball. Yeah. Not that crystal ball. And
yours are made out of crystal, or it's. Anyway, we had to do a little bit of a Ghost of the Christmas Yet to Come, and it's not the Ghost of Future Christmas. The Ghost is actually of Christmas is Yet to Come, and this is one that might not come to pass, right? This is the part that Ebenezer can change. This is the part that potentially us as a country or society or culture could change. But we've had a never-ending war on drugs up top for the drugs on winning that one. We've had a never-ending war on terror, which is still ongoing, despite us kind of sort of officially ending it after 20 years. And there's kind of no end in sight for the ever-ongoing war on Christmas. And I got a quote here from Politico.com, or .org, I don't know what they are. Doesn't matter. I've got all the little links here. I'll probably put that up on our Patreon as a... free to read for everybody. But what they said was, what the cessation of hostilities would even look like depends on where you stand. Fortunately for those who benefit from the grievance industrial complex, there's a robust media infrastructure in place to ensure neither side achieves complete satisfaction. And I quoted that verbatim because I really liked their grievance industrial complex, which seems so prevalent in modern times, but as we've kind of shown, like, Henry Ford was pretty good at airing his grievances for Festivus, so.
What I found interesting for my research was how similar the arguments are, and they just change the target to whatever group is acceptable for that era, right? In the 20s and the 10s, it was Jews. In the 50s, it was communists.
Yeah.
In the aughts, it was atheists.
Atheists, yeah.
And now it's progressives.
Progressives, potentially Muslims. I don't know. There's.
I think that day is that door closed. I think that was more like the 10s. That was pretty popular. But now you can't attack Muslims anymore. Not that you should. This is not a defense of attacking any individual.
No, I mean,
group.
Like, you shouldn't be attacking anybody, regardless of what they believe. And the whole point is, like, the media's going to keep playing it up. And making sure that the divide is still there. They want the divide. The media wants the divide. They want the clickbait titles. They want all of this stuff. They want people to consume their media. They want you to believe there is a war on Christmas. Each side, whether you're on the Happy Holidays side or the Merry Christmas side, they want to claim superiority. Both sides want to claim superiority, and they don't really give a crap about goodwill toward men or peace on earth. They just want to be right, first and foremost. And Mike, I'm surprised we've made it this far in the episode where we haven't even talked about the really difficult decision. Does your family celebrate Happy Honda Days or Toyotathon? I mean, we're a house divided here because my wife drives a Toyota and I drive a Honda. So it's this season's real rough in our household.
You know, my family also supports both, and I've always felt on Honda Days personally. But
there you go. That's why we're friends, Mike.
You know, that's Toyotathon's okay. I'm not anti-Toyotathon.
Yeah, I mean, they got you like know, what I'm really stuff, against, right?
Is those horrible GM advertisements where they put two $120,000 vehicles in a parking lot in a mansion and then put wrapping paper on it. That's what I'm against.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I do want to say, as of 2016, or this is our stats portion now, the ghost of Christmas stats, the accountant ghost, that Charles Dickens tried to write about but just couldn't figure out how to work it in like a compelling way to the novel.
Oh, math wasn't his strong suit.
Yes. As of 2016, 51% of Americans believed that there was a war on Christmas.
That is an insane number. That is so high.
That's an insane number. That's more than the number that voted for any presidential candidate, I believe. Like, nobody's ever had 51%, I don't think.
That is, presidential candidates in the past have received 51%.
Yes, but that's like a crazy, insane number.
Yeah, never. No president has ever received more than 51% of the vote.
I don't think we have 51% of the population that believes we landed on the moon. To put that in perspective, to put that stat in perspective, I don't think we have 51% of the population that believes we landed on the moon or that the Earth is round. So I don't, crazy stat.
That is shockingly high to me. Like it should be.
It is crazy high.
5%. It should be 5%. That's why.
It should be like 0% because the next stats of 2021 here, 95% of Americans say that they celebrate Christmas. They celebrate Christmas. So how can there be a war on something that 95% of the population celebrates? I'll tell you why, Mike. I'll tell you why. Because 93% of the population exchanges gifts. And that is right out. You immigrants exchanging gifts, you go back to Germany right now. You go back to
Scandinavia and Germany.
You bring your Wiener Schnitzel. Leave the Spätzle, though, please. And your rye bread. And you go back to Germany. And take your gifts with you.
No good GED, Northern Europeans, not acclimating to American culture, bringing your effing Christmas trees and your fat white guys in red. We're against it.
What's he doing in my house? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, he's an intruder. He's an intruder, you know? Christmas story, castle doctrine, all that.
Yeah. 74% of Americans go to Christmas parties. 65% of Americans attend religious services for Christmas, which is even higher than the number of people that believe there's a war on Christmas.
Oh, my fucking God. I mean, isn't that crazy? Did you look up the percentage of Americans that are actually Christian?
No.
Look it up. You didn't.
You look it up. 88% of the population puts up a Christmas tree. So 30 million real trees and 8 to 12 million artificial trees each Christmas season. How many are Christian, Mike?
I am looking it up because it's not that high. 66% of Americans in 2023 are Christian.
Okay. Well, 65% in 2021 attended Christmas services. And I know there's a lot of Christians that are kind of the only for major holidays, right? So that doesn't necessarily mean 65% of the population is devout Christian.
Well, what it means is that 66% of the population is Christian and 95% of the population celebrates Christmas.
Yeah. So I think that greater than half of the population acknowledges the religious background behind the holiday. 95% of people celebrate it regardless. That doesn't necessarily mean they have a nativity scene or they're, you know, praying to Jesus, but they celebrate the holiday, maybe the commercial version or the secular version of it. But it's celebrated, and 95% of the population would not possibly be offended by a Merry Christmas.
Well, I can tell you, just for myself, I am no longer a Christian, as we've discussed on the show.
Yes.
And I say Merry Christmas.
Yes.
I don't know if I've ever consciously said Happy Holidays.
I say Happy Holidays all the time, but probably not for good reasons. Some people call me an instigator, but I, you know, like in my life, seriously though, I mean, I'll say Merry Christmas if somebody says Merry Christmas to me first. Otherwise, I just kind of say Happy Holidays because I don't know and I don't want to assume, even though 95% of the people celebrate Christmas.
Oh, I am pro-Christmas.
And I've done...
goes back to pagan days.
Yeah.
And the celebration of the solstice and Yule.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah, it's like a European holiday.
Yeah.
So
the point of the thing, though, Mike, is that I just don't want to assume, and it's 5% of the population, apparently, you know, of 2021, that doesn't celebrate Christmas. They must celebrate something else, or maybe they don't celebrate anything at all. Maybe they're Puritans. I don't know. But I don't see anything wrong with just wishing somebody a happy holidays, because it kind of covers everything. You know, it covers Christmas, New Year, possibly Thanksgiving, any other things that aren't related to Christians or pilgrims. Or a giant ball dropping.
I am
or
pro
Caesar being stabbed.
Other people well, no matter
yes.
what words you use. So.
Yes. The point is that I'm trying to get to, and it's tough, Mike, because you know it's Christmas and everybody's happy, and you know family members are getting into political arguments because 'tis the season. But the point is that I did do some research previously, and I don't have any numbers or anything like that. But most of the people that don't celebrate Christmas do not get offended by being wished a Merry Christmas, because they can read the social cues that people should be able to read, and they can translate the Merry Christmas that their ears hear and hear the wishing you a good time right now. You know what I mean? Like they can make that connection. It's not Merry Christmas. If you don't celebrate Christmas, you're going to spend an eternity in hell. It's Merry Christmas. It's the end of the year. Everybody's kind of happy and goodwill towards everyone. Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas to you. Not you. You can kiss my ass. You can kiss his ass. I'm sorry. That's Christmas vacation. Anyway, point is that...
I would like to say here, Nate.
Yes.
I just looked this up, and I know that I'm breaking in. I don't mean to offend your sensibility.
Man, it's Christmas. Break in.
It's Christmas. 4% of Christians do not celebrate Christmas.
Sure.
So of the 5% of the population that does not celebrate Christian at all or Christmas at all, at least half of those are Christians who don't celebrate.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting here, what I'm getting at here is there is a very small percentage of the population who is anti-Christmas or anti,
yes.
you know, anti-Christian celebration, almost
yeah.
to the point of non-existence.
Well, it's... You get to a certain percentage here, Mike, and it's just not statistically relevant anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, right. That's what I'm saying here.
I know.
This is like a statistically not relevant part of the population.
Yeah.
It's a holiday that transcends the religion that
well, it transcends
backs it up,
any
you know?
Kind of religious or political
yeah,
or anything. It's almost a human celebration more so than it is strictly religious, right?
Right.
If you have 65% of the population attending religious services, that's 35% that's not religious and not attending services, but you still have 95% celebrating. So the majority of the people that celebrate Christmas are religious. Presumably, depending on, you know, the stats and how everything shakes out. But, you know, a majority of the people that celebrate Christmas are religious and doing it for religious reasons. And there are a large number of people that aren't religious, potentially in any way, shape, or form, that still celebrate Christmas. So to say that there's a war on Christmas is fairly ridiculous.
It is. And I am one of those guys that'll respond to Happy Holidays with a Merry Christmas.
Sure.
Not trying to be aggressive, just because that's
well,
what I'm celebrating. Like,
if
I would respond Happy Hanukkah if somebody wished me Happy Hanukkah. I'm pro Hanukkah. I'm pro Kwanzaa. I'm pro celebration in general. So,
well, make it happen, man.
Yeah, make it happen. Like I'm
for it. Pour me some eggnog. Let's do this. Right, you know. So, you know, I think by and large, there's not a war on Christmas. It's been completely 100% fabricated. Anyone who's worked in corporate America and potentially even, you know, public sector stuff would know that there are certain rules or certain guidelines that people think that sit in offices and click away at keyboards and write angry things on the internet in their off time, deem necessary to be the most inclusive of all time. And inclusivity is not a bad thing. And so that's why I think Happy Holidays kind of was sprung forth, because it's an easy position for HR or corporate lawyers to defend. Well, we're just wishing Happy Holidays regardless of what anyone celebrates, even though 95% of the population celebrates Christmas.
Very much an HR creation. Happy holidays.
And there's really
not that I'm against it either.
There's nothing wrong with it. Like, if somebody wishes me Happy Holidays, I don't sit there and think they're a pinko commie bastard. You know what I mean?
No. Like, we just picked out our Christmas cards for the year here, and I'm pretty sure it says Merry Christmas on it.
Sure. I make sure ours always say Happy Holidays, mostly for other reasons, but not generally inclusivity. I'm sorry, everybody that gets my Happy Holidays card. Not really. But, you know, it's just, it's, I feel in my mind, Happy Holidays, and I'm an atheist, so, and I still celebrate Christmas. And I fight the fight every year. I fight the good fight every year, people, because we just got through Halloween, and the day after Halloween, my wife wanted to put up the Christmas tree. And I'm like, no, the day after Thanksgiving is when we can put up the Christmas tree. That's when we can put up the lights. That's when we can do all the stuff for Christmas. We have to have, like, I know the retail world has, this year they didn't even have, like, a dedicated Halloween. It was Halloween and Christmas. They had both sharing the same space. Like, they're getting the jump on it earlier and earlier every year. And the goth kids are kind of losing their firm foothold on keeping Christmas stuff at bay till after Halloween. So keep it up, goth kids. Keep fighting the good fight. We need more Halloween stuff and less Christmas stuff early in the season. But I don't have a problem with either. I don't have a problem with whatever anybody wants to wish me. Because, you know, it's the spirit of the season. It's the spirit of the season. The spirit of the season is goodwill towards all, which is something I can definitely get behind. And if you want to wish me a happy Kwanzaa, a happy Hanukkah, a Merry Ramadan, Merry Christmas, what have you, I'm happy to be wished well at all, honestly, in today's society of negativity and negative this and negative that. If you want to wish me a happy anything, I'm happy for that. Like, I'm going to receive that in a cheerful, goodwill towards all attitude.
Oh, for sure.
Do you want some fun stats, Mike?
I would love some fun stats.
Oh, good. The world record for number of Christmas lights on a Christmas tree. This was achieved in Belgium in 2010. Do you have any guesses?
No.
194,672 Christmas lights. That's about half of what Clark Griswold had on his house in Christmas Vacation. In 1931, a 20-foot fir tree was erected by construction workers on Christmas Eve in New York's Rockefeller Center. 1931 is a 20-foot tree. 1933, a 50-foot tree was unveiled at the very first official lighting ceremony. A 50-foot tree. I can't even picture a 20. I mean, I can picture the big trees because we live in Minnesota. But, you know, like, to see one that big lit up in person would be amazing. In 1999, there was a 100-foot, 100-year-old, 10-ton Norway spruce lit up in New York's Rockefeller Center. In 2007, they switched to 30,000 energy-efficient LEDs lights on the Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center to make it more eco-friendly. Currently, as of 2021, there are 350 million future Christmas trees growing on United States farms, Christmas tree farms. The most popular Christmas tree species are the balsam fir, the Douglas fir, the Fraser fir, noble fir, Scotch pine, Virginia pine, white pine, Norway spruce, and blue spruce. The most expensively decorated Christmas tree, which was displayed in the Emirates Palace in 2010, was $11 million, $26,900. That was the most expensive.
Are you telling me that the Kingdom of the United Arab Emirates celebrates Christmas?
Man, 95% of Americans celebrate Christmas. Christmas is a worldwide phenomenon. There is no war on Christmas, Mike.
Just checking for those trying to keep track of the war. The war.
Yes, the war. The Christmas. Arabs have joined us. We're winning, I guess. Can we get Bill O'Reilly to signal that the war is over?
I wonder if we're going to hear this Christmas that the war on Christmas is over again.
I don't think so, man. Next year, maybe. Next year, maybe. How many candy canes do you think the United States produces each year, Mike?
Oh, it's got to be 1.5 billion.
Hey, you're pretty dang close. 1.76 billion candy canes each year.
I can believe it.
And Americans send 1.5 billion Christmas cards annually.
I can believe that, too.
If you put all the candy canes that America makes and you put them end to end, they would stretch 167,000 miles and would circle the equator 6.7 times. Roughly 30% of the population visits a post office during the holidays. American military installations overseas receive 30 million pounds of holiday mail each year. The United States Postal Service delivers 15.8 billion cards, letters, and packages between Thanksgiving and Christmas Eve. And the United States Postal Service sells over 1.3 billion winter holiday stamps a year.
The only stamps I buy are Christmas stamps.
Yes.
Because I buy a whole pack every year.
Yes, we bought our pack earlier and have since put them to good use for the annual holiday card from our family. But we do other mailings throughout the year, too. I did a unintended French inhale or whatever the official term for that is from gravy, where I tried to get the smoke away from me, but I ended up putting it out my nose. But a lot of good flavors. It was just unexpected.
I have one stat, and I'd like to share it now.
Yes.
So, in the United States, we spend $1.3 billion on Christmas trees. We also spend $655 billion annually on Christmas retail purchases. Now, that sounds like a big number.
It sounds like two stats to me, Mike, but
more shocking fact.
Yes.
Is that constitutes approximately 2.5% of the annual GDP of the country being spent for one holiday.
There's a war on Christmas, Mike.
That includes all the military spending, all the R&D, all the everything, all this money that we produce in a year or spend in a year. Our entire economy, 2.5%, is around one holiday.
Yes. But the war is on, Mike, and we need that spending to double, triple, quadruple even, so that Bezos can get that 15th spaceship that he's working on. Do you do anything, I know with our family Christmases and stuff, it's getting to the point where, like, I don't buy my siblings any kind of Christmas gifts, typically, and it's more their kids, right, because they've got kids and stuff, and they don't get me any Christmas gifts, and it's like, I don't know, I'm an adult, I like getting gifts, don't get me wrong, but I don't need people to buy into the massive consumerism that is generally associated with Christmas. And I know my wife has tried to get her family to buy into the draw a name from a hat, which they don't want to do. They don't want to do it. Their family has, in the past, instituted a no big box store gifts, only, you know, like handmade gifts thing in the past, which I can get behind. Do you have any kind of ideas or restrictions or it's not really a restriction. It's just kind of like a interesting way to curtail, like, because why go into debt for something?
I do is I do not buy my brothers gifts. They're adults with very good jobs. They don't need anything from me, and I don't need anything from them.
Their gift is you're their brother, right?
Yeah. I give each of my nieces and nephews $50 because my grandmother used to give us $50, which granted in 1990, that was a lot more money than it is now.
Yes. But, but inflation be damned. This is Christmas we're talking about.
That's right. Hey, I got $50 from my grandmother for the entirety of my life. So
yes,
that $50 is worth a hell of a lot more in 1992 versus 2002, for sure.
Yeah.
I buy my wife a gift. Usually I buy her a gift between her birthday and Christmas, one gift. We have a $50 per event limit. I usually go over. I don't ask for a gift in return for my wife. I do not usually celebrate holidays of any kind. I don't get my parents' presents. They don't want gifts. They actually actively refuse Christmas gifts because, as they said, if they wanted it, they would have bought it. They have plenty of money and more money than I have. So they have no desire to get gifts at all. They're more interested in getting together and having a little party, which is good. And
I think that's what it should be about.
Yeah. And I go to my wife's family's Christmas party every year. And she wants to give gifts, which is her prerogative. And I guess the only Christmas gifts I really give are to the children of my friends and to my nieces and nephews, which the children of my friends, I usually give actual presents because they're young. Yep. And my nieces and nephews have always gotten cash. Always. Yeah. So
the ones you don't like, get it in pennies, and everybody else gets.
I give them $50 bills, and sometimes it's not even at Christmas. If I don't see them, I don't give them the money until the next time I see them. So if it's in March, it's in March. Sure. You know.
my gift giving philosophy and I've never had any blowback on this so far. So I guess knock on wood. But my gift giving philosophy is I generally try to find something that they actually want or that would help them in some way or something they've like mentioned in passing, but never really thought to equate it to like a gift. So incredibly like useful gifts that you might open up and look at it and be like, what the hell is this? You know, this is a weird gift, but it's something they'll actually use and maybe even specifically wanted at some point throughout the year. And so like for my dad, for example, they like to play a lot of card games and they play a lot of card games that require multiple decks of, you know, playing cards. And so he's bemoaning like having to shuffle all these decks. So I got him I don't know if he'll have opened it at this time or not by the time the episode is out, but I don't think he listens, so it doesn't matter. But a card shuffler that can shuffle as many decks as he needs. And yeah, it's like a $20 thing or whatever it is. It doesn't like the price of it doesn't matter. It's something that he would not buy for himself for whatever reason. Like it's not important enough in his day-to-day life. But it's one of those things that encourages the stuff that he does like and will help him with things he does like, which I think is a win, right? Like it's a personal thought going into the gift more so than the price tag. Because there's a lot of people on Instagram and social media that are all like, oh my God, look at the thousands of dollars that was spent on this gift that I just got, which is missing the point, I think.
I agree. Well, if you remember, I'm sure you do. Last year I made Kahlua for everybody.
Dude, and, I loved that Kahlua.
Yeah, it was good Kahlua. I made labels, custom labels for it, and Sarah's family thought that I just bought Kahlua, and they weren't that impressed until they found out that I made it.
Oh, sure.
That made the labels and everything.
Yeah. Because
it looked pretty good. It looked pretty legit.
It did look legit.
Yeah, it looked pretty legit. So,
and it tasted great, and it was sugar-free. It's one of the, like, one of two sugar-free Kahluas in the entire world.
Yep, pretty much. And it was a big hit.
Yes.
So I don't know if I'll do that this year. It took me 2 days to make all that Kahlua.
Yeah,
it was very labor intensive.
Small price to pay for banging Kahlua.
That is true. I usually make Kahlua for my personal bar.
Sure.
So it's just an extension of what I already do. And it's like 2 days to make all that Kahlua is what it took me.
Yeah.
It's a pretty labor intensive process.
Yes. Well, let me know what I have to do to get a bottle of that under my tree, and I'll see what I can do. Sending you some foot pictures in advance. Do you want the sock like partway down or all the way down? I'm new to this whole like only feets thing.
Yeah, there we go.
Where are you at with your cigar, Mike?
I have about an inch left.
Yeah, about the same. I think I slowed down a bit. I don't know. I like this one. There was a few times throughout smoking it where I kind of thought like, gee, I don't know if I would smoke this one again in the grand scheme.
I completely understand what you're saying because it is very mild, very good flavor, very nutty. And about halfway through, it started to change and now it's getting darker and darker.
Yeah.
Very good smoke. Very pleasant.
It's very pleasant. I like it. I would not say no to it. Again, I just don't know that I would necessarily, you know, seek it out to smoke.
No, not at the price point. That's the big consideration for me.
Yeah, that's kind of the kicker. The shelf appeal is great on this. It looks good. It tastes good throughout. I don't know quite what it is, Mike. It's
very medium bodied and pleasant. I will say that my uneven burn self-corrected. I didn't have to light or do anything. I just rotated and the burn self-corrected. It's not a flavor profile that we typically go after.
Yeah, that's true.
But it is very nice.
It's very nice. I don't regret buying it. I don't regret smoking it. I would smoke it again, but it's not one that's going to fit in the rotation or the recommended. You know, I'd rather smoke that gigantic one again from Asylum 13 over this one. But
For sure, that one was intense. It had orange flavor and it was octagon. It was very
that's the Placencia cool. You're thinking of.
Oh, that was the Placencia.
The other Asylum 13 we did was the one that wouldn't fit in your cigar cutter, and you had to borrow mine because it was
Right.
A little bit larger. But it was like the nicotine content on that one was through the roof. And
We were chattering like jaybirds, you know.
That one was very good.
Yeah, it was an intense experience. I was hoping for more. I think I came into this.
I know. I think the expectations kind of let us down on this one a little bit, but that's not a fault of the cigar. It's a fault of us wanting to recreate the first one of theirs we smoked. This one's very nice. It's, the barber pole, we're always a sucker for the barber pole. This one, I think, delivers. It did get darker throughout. But, you know, to your point, Mike, it's not really the flavor profile that we're drawn to. I totally would smoke another one. I wouldn't go buy one just to smoke it myself, you know?
No, if the last quarter of this cigar started at the midpoint, then I would have changed my opinion and see it developed. Because it did develop. And it started off very mild. And that's in a good way. Again, I think so.
It was very nutty. Large cigar.
Yes. Yes. It was very flavorful. That's not the right word. It didn't have the full profile that I wanted because it was very mild.
Yes.
Didn't have that depth of character that I desire from it. Especially being called the ogre. You know, I want
I know, right? I wanted something sassy.
I want to have to wear mithril to survive this cigar.
Yes, indeed. The name led me to believe something much stronger than what I got.
Right. I wanted some Warhammer action. That's all I'm saying.
40K or otherwise, Mike?
Oh, geez, not 40K. That's got a lot of controversy right now. We don't want to get the 40K bros up in arms.
Yeah. But yeah, I think I did have, you know, like the uneven burn that I had to manually correct, and then mine just kind of went out. So I'm just going to call it here because it's Christmas, and we should let you get back to your family if you're listening on Christmas Day. Otherwise, you know, thanks for the great year, listeners. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays for the 5% that don't celebrate Christmas. And catch us next season, first Wednesday in March. Check out our Instagram and our Patreon. We've got fun, exciting things there. And as always, thanks for listening.
Merry Christmas and be safe. Have fun.